And welcome into the Tuesday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Joseph, good morning. How we doing?
Doing all right. I'd like to thank the Twitter account Yossi at Yossi Forsberg. It's a good Twitter account for sending me this clip of Cam Scataboo just destroying everyone in Giants camp. Look at this guy run, man. I'll tell you what, New York Giants. I mean, he's gonna do some damage out there.
Gotta offensive player of the
Cam
year
Scataboo.
In the NFL.
Yeah, maybe that might be a little. That might be a little
league
much.
MVP.
Give him a couple years.
All right,
give him a couple years. I mean, I don't know. It's weird. He's running past an entire defense here. I don't know. The Giants' defense isn't that bad, are they?
Well.
Nah, they're not that good. Well, actually.
They're not completely terrible.
Yeah.
There is that. Ian Safar, how are we doing? What's going on?
Doing great. Just checking out the newest episode of Charmed. But
yeah.
Fantastic. Hope everybody has a great Tuesday.
This may be turning into, Robbie and Rex Road tradition. Each morning as our show begins, Charmed is on TV, and Rex Road is just captivated.
Yeah, it's probably too much of a distraction. At some point, there's going to be a reason. We need to just turn the channel. Weird show, though.
I've got the remote.
Yeah.
I'll decide when the channel gets turned. See what happens.
Other things have to check on, in the world.
That's true. We do. We got a lot going on today's program. Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel will be with us at 7 o'clock. We will get into the latest on all things Tennessee and the Boo Carter situation with him as well. So looking forward to that at 7 o'clock. An early Rob rant today around 7:30 because Brian Callahan, live press conference, 7:40 this morning approximately, which does not happen ever on our show, Joe, where we have live press conferences to go to. So we're excited for that one today. Brian Callahan speaking later this morning.
Yeah, which sort of highlights big change for him this year. I mean, I haven't seen this with any coach here. I mean, it makes sense, especially like the heat that we've been having.
Yeah. Get out there early.
Makes sense to, get practice started at 8 a.m., go to 8 to 10. I mean, I know that when they had two-a-days back in the day, that was probably one of the two right around there, right? But for the most part, they've done, middle day practices, maybe 10, maybe 9, 10, but a 7:40 presser before practice, kind of interesting. So that whatever happens during a particular day, you don't have Brian Callahan to ask about it, which kind of stinks, but you also knock it out. So I guess you can ask him about what happened the day before every morning. So that's good, I guess.
Brian, going back to yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, today he'll no doubt be asked about what we've found out the last couple days.
There is no doubt about that. So looking forward to Brian Callahan's press conference a little bit later in the program. Treylon Burks, who spent a lot of time talking about him yesterday, Joe, and the collarbone injury and how that likely signaled the end of his Titans career. Well, it has. He has been released with an injured designation on Monday, which essentially means, Joe, they've come to a settlement here in his deal, and he can be picked up out there by somebody else. If he doesn't, he goes to injured reserve, and we'll see what his future looks like after that. But for all intents and purposes, his Titans career is now over, with Treylon Burks getting released with an injury designation yesterday. So, we talked about basically 53 catches is probably going to be the number that he ends up at in his Titans career, and it's over with. 53 catches, 699 yards, one touchdown. Well, officially, that's where it is. It's where he's going to end up as a Tennessee Titan. 53 catches, 699 yards, and a touchdown.
Yeah, so you can now you can close the book on his. Yeah, obviously he's one of the biggest busts, I guess, in Titans history. Right? I mean, it's certainly an interesting debate.
He's on a very crowded list right around him of where he was selected, where we'll talk about here in just a few minutes.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. The debate on that includes a couple people drafted right before him, so it's quite a run for the franchise. So you look at that, and I guess everybody can get mad at John Robinson all over again. Like we said yesterday, too bad for him. It's not, I think at this point, the expectations were – for most people, I think, we're pretty reasonable and realistic. You know, make the team, not make the team, I don't know. You know, I think it would have taken a lot, but I think beyond that, they have, even though this receiver room is no, you know, superstar collection, it still would have been hard for him to do a lot on the field this year. So, yeah, we'll see where he goes from here in terms of trying to, you know, stick in it. Does he want to stick with it, keep playing? I don't know. You know, I probably would see how far you can take it. But, I mean, man, it just at some point you also have to realize, like, you just can't stay healthy in this league.
Yeah, so PK ran this piece yesterday at paulkuharski.com with Burks out of there. 11 of the 91 players that are currently on the Titans roster date back to John Robinson. 11 of them. So it's dwindling down very quickly.
Yeah.
And that, by the way, that's Jeff Simmons, Monty Hooker, Morgan Cox, Mason Kinsey, Corey Levin, Roger McCreary, Chig Okonkwo, Julius Chestnut, believe it or not, Thomas Odukoya, Andrew Rupsich, and Mike Brown. There you go.
Wow.
Those are your Titans that are still connected to J-Rob.
And of those 11, yeah, I mean, how many are key, you know, players? You know, Simmons, Hooker,
Morgan Cox.
Well, that's true. Morgan Cox definitely is.
Very good.
Yeah. But boy, that's I mean, it hasn't been that long, you know.
No. It is not. 11 guys on the 90.
I mean, 11 will start.
91 players that are on the roster.
Yeah. It's a lot of churn, and then it's like, yeah, and then the churn hasn't yielded much yet.
Yeah.
It's not yet. So, I mean,
well, that's how you end up in the situation there. I mean,
you're bad.
When you factor that in, you factor in some guys that they've tried to bring in as roster churning that's not gone very well, and a tweet that we're going to get to from Nick Suss that I saw yesterday that just kind of boggles my mind. We'll get into that coming up here in just a few minutes. You factor in all these things, Joe, and it's no real surprise that they were 3-14 last year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it does add up. And yeah, I mean, it's amazing that tenure, you know, that John Robinson tenure, like how good and then how bad it was. You know, I mean, it kind of like on a dime. I know some people, you know, it's like they look at their life. You know, it's like how many things changed. And even in society, but in people's lives, like with COVID, right? And it's like the John Robinson GM tenure too, you know?
Yeah.
That COVID draft. Some people were able to draft good players during that draft, believe it or not. But from then on, it's just weird how it nosedived.
Well, you know, obviously yesterday with the Treylon Burks stuff being thrown out there, you know, around the league, it was, hey, let's revisit the Titans trading of A.J. Brown to the Philadelphia Eagles and just go side by side of what that looks like. You know, PK put out a tweet, and I mean, when you go, even if you just went purely stats, just lined them up next to each other, what A.J. Brown's done in Philadelphia and what Treylon Burks has done with the Titans, I mean, it's pretty unbelievable, the difference. And then you factor in, oh yeah, A.J. Brown has been to a Super Bowl, lost it, and also has just won a Super Bowl as well. I mean, it's going to go down as, and look, I don't have some big laundry list of NFL trades in front of me right now, but it will be up there in terms of the worst trades in NFL history.
Yeah. I mean, you've got, obviously, the two that come to mind are like the Cowboys building a dynasty off an aging Herschel Walker, the Vikings trading all these picks to the Cowboys for Herschel Walker when he was past his prime. And then Mike Ditka, at least he was going for a rookie, but I mean, like trading an entire draft so he could get Ricky Williams out of Texas. Like, go look back at what went back for Ricky Williams. It's insane, man.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's others that should be obvious, you know. So, like, in the whole picture of the NFL, it'd be interesting. But especially if A.J. Brown, like, I mean, how many more years of being great does he have? Because if he's got a few more years of being great, like you said, he's got a ring already. I mean,
he's only 28.
Like, is he? If he becomes a Hall of Fame receiver,
oh, he's going.
Then it's yeah. I mean, yeah. He's on the track.
He's well
for sure.
On the track.
He's on the track. So, yeah. I mean, I wrong about a lot of things, but I went back and read my little tantrum column yesterday. Like, well, that one was right.
He nailed that one.
God, the Vrabel, the whole thing, man. Like, I mean, that was – that night was just like – it's just everything ripped apart.
I mean, I'm trying to think back. Like, we've had some shows. I mean, we've been doing this almost 5 years now, which is it's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
We've had some shows where you've walked in and been a little angry, a little upset. I think that one takes the cake. The day that they traded, the show after they traded AJ Brown, I think that was at the top of the list.
Yeah, I did. It was a tantrum in writing, and then I kept tantruming. And I spent, you know, then you're also like, again, everybody can have whatever opinion they want, but like, of course, still is like, oh yeah, I get it, yeah, that makes sense. So like, it made me even more angry, like that we had somebody on, you know, like, no, we all must be unified. This is the dumbest move of all time. But that was a very angry time.
That was a very angry, lots of anger, man, it's floating around.
I mean, that was, and again, that was, it was right after, that was right after the crying session in Indy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's like, you think about that day at Nissan Stadium and where things looked, and then all of a sudden it's like, phew, fast forward. Just a few weeks, and my goodness, did you just pull the rug out from everybody.
You think that J-Rob was crying in Indy because he knew that he was getting ready to trade A.J. Brown? In retrospect, maybe so.
He's like, don't do it, John, but I have to.
Still to this day, I will never forget Vrabel's face on that broadcast of the draft of him just walking off after they make the A.J. Brown trade. It's like, oh, God.
And then him, you know, trying to like, oh, yeah, we were. I love A.J., but we were in. We did we're in lockstep. Okay, Mike.
Yep, good stuff. 615-737-1025, our phone number. I saw a tweet from Nick Suss yesterday as it relates to the Tennessee Titans that, frankly, I just couldn't believe. But the more you think about it, like, yeah, okay, it makes sense. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Taking your thoughts all program long on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe, I saw a tweet yesterday from Nick Suss, who does an outstanding job covering the Titans for the Tennessean, friend of the show, that is just amazing when you read it, okay? He was talking about the first-round picks in the NFL from 2020 to 2022, which we know is just an absolute doozy of a run for the Titans when you're talking about Isaiah Wilson, Caleb Farley, Treylon Burks. And he broke it down by snap counts, okay? First-round draft picks from 2020 to 2022 with the fewest career snaps. Heading that list, as we know, Isaiah Wilson with 4 snaps for the Tennessee Titans. He played 4.
I remember there was like some debate, like, wait, was it 4 or was it 5?
And how many of those came on like an extra point?
Yeah, at least a couple.
Yeah.
And I think, didn't he get like blown up?
Oh, he got absolutely smoked on one of them too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So 4 snaps for Isaiah Wilson. So when I started reading this from Suss, I knew that he would be at the top. It's like, it's hard to beat 4 snaps.
Yeah.
You get through this list. By the way, quarterbacks on here, Trey Lance with 360 at number 3. So that's incredible. Caleb Farley apparently played 476 snaps. I would have gone lower on that. But Farley coming in at number 5 on this list. And Treylon Burks is at number 9 at 1,021. Which means of these 9 players that Nick Suss has listed that are first round draft picks from 2020 to 2022 with the fewest career snaps, the Titans have 3 of them. 3 of them. Isaiah Wilson, Caleb Farley, Treylon Burks. And by the way, you know, Henry Ruggs is on this list as well, and he hit somebody and killed him and went to jail. So right. there's that.
Yeah. That's 33.333% by my math. That's
not good.
That's amazing. You've got a third of the busts in the NFL over of the biggest busts in the NFL over a 3-year period. Very hard to do. That's one of those. It's a great tweet by Suss. Great research. And that's one of those that if you could throw this into one of those search engines, you know, and figure out like how many similar stretches could you find from various teams where they would have that same thing, where they would have three of the top three, three of the top 10 in a three-year period. Three straight picks like that in the first round. Incredible. Hard to do. Rare. Special. So, you know, Ed on the text line was like, you know, can we put the A.J. Brown trade to bed? I said, give it cookies and tell it a story. I think he, like, to seriously answer Ed's question, no, we'll keep bringing it. It'll be brought up forever. Yeah. I mean, it's like, as long as
the Titans are playing football.
I just brought up the Mike Ditka trade, which would have been, I think, 99, 2000, right? Ricky Williams. I just brought up the Herschel Walker Dallas trade. That was 1987, I think. 88. Like, these things live on forever. It will never go to bed because it really is extraordinary.
Well, and you think about these three draft picks that we always keep coming back to. And look, it's not just as simple as that. Like, it's not – the Titans are not 3-14 last year only because they had three consecutive first-round picks that were just absolute tire fires.
No, plenty of
other
things.
It's a huge factor in it. Yeah. But there are plenty of other things that have led into that, and we know that. But, I mean, it does kind of underscore if you just totally whiff on your first-round picks year after year for an extended period of time, it's really hard to overcome that with your roster. And, you know, I'm looking through the time that they were – that since just purely since they've been here in Nashville – as the Titans. I mean, they've had some doozies of first-round picks, right? Like, you know, Andre Woolfolk was a first-round pick in 03. But I don't think they've had anything that's that bad. Like, it's hard to be that bad 3 years in a row. Like, even – I mean, they had two out of three from 11 to 13. You went through Jake Locker at quarterback.
Yep, that's, yes.
You had Kendall Wright, who was okay. And then Chance Warmack, which was an absolute disaster.
It's a very bad stretch because Wright was fine, but he wasn't anything near what you were hoping for.
No.
And like the other two were obviously total busts.
Yeah, they've had some stretches here where it's been bad. But I don't know that they will ever top. If they do, they're in serious trouble. Three consecutive years of Wilson, Farley, and Burks. And the total lack of production for different reasons. But lack of production from those three. It's hard to do that.
Yeah, and that's those three that you just said, that's what I looked at too. Like, that's the closest I can. I mean, I even looked through the whole Oilers, you know, time period. I mean, sometimes you get into the, you know, the 60s and it's like, but even with them, like, you go a couple drafts with someone like, I've never heard of that guy. I've never heard of Mac Hake, although that was second round pick anyway. But then you'll run across, you know, Doug Wilkerson. You'll run across Dan Pastorini. You know, John Matuszak, obviously Earl Campbell, Robert Brazil, like, you know, even the entire history of the Oilers, by the way, I still love this three-year stretch of 82, Mike Munchak, Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
83, Bruce Matthews, Hall of Famer. 84, Dean Steinkeller, just offensive lineman year. I'm sure the people of Houston were like, God, will you stop?
Draft something else?
But, you know.
Worked out pretty well.
It worked out. It did work out pretty well. And then Ray Childers, by the way. After that, so, but, you know, they had, I mean, again, you look at Floyd's run as GM, obviously Eddie George and, you know, McNair back to back, but, like, you know, the Javon Kearse, Keith Bullock back to back, man. I mean, you know, Haynesworth in 02. I mean,
again, it's more complicated. It's more complicated than this, but yes. Think about this 6 year stretch of first round picks from the mid 90s, right at 2000. They had McNair, Eddie George, Kenny Holmes, Kevin Dyson, Javon Kearse, Keith Bullock. You're talking about five guys there that played pretty massive roles in why those early teams were very, very good, right? So,
absolutely.
Again, it's more complicated than just the first-round picks. But it does show you, like, if you can hit on your first-round picks, you're probably, as an organization, going to like how that turns out for you on the win-loss record at the end of the day. And if you don't, and particularly, like, it's one thing to miss. It's another to totally whiff. Like, if you totally whiff on your first-round picks, it's really difficult to overcome that in the NFL.
Right, like Kendall Wright, for example, didn't live up to the billing and all that stuff, but he was a important player in a year that helped turn the franchise around in 2016. You know, he was, I mean, I would say, you know, he and Rishard Matthews are those are your top two receivers with Marcus Mariota. I mean, so even that still ended up helping the franchise in some way.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously these guys, and like you said, like if you made these, you know, same three picks and you did a lot of other stuff right, and you had like better picks, you know, after them again, 20. I mean, it's like, you know, there's just very little there. Christian Fulton, but he wasn't there in 21. I mean, you keep, you know, Raidens and Monty Rice and Dez Fitzpatrick, you know, like it was 2022. Hey, I mean, McCreary's good. There's your one. And Chig's fine, but Nicholas Petitfrere, Malik Willis, and a third round pick where you could have taken a player, but you just took a flyer on a quarterback, Hassan Haskins, Kyle Phillips. I mean, the drafts, none of the rest of those drafts weren't total disasters, but they were bad.
Yeah.
Like, overall, it was just really bad NFL drafting for three straight years. So, you know, the thing is, we agree, and I think most people agree, like the firing of John Robinson, first of all, in season, dumb. And also, you can't separate it from, like, the Eagles scene and all that stuff and A.J. Brown. But, like, there was a build – there was building evidence, not that we knew at that point, like, the outcome of, obviously, a Burks or, right. or even a Farley or – well, Wilson we did. But even a Farley at that point. But still, there was building evidence that, man, this is going totally the wrong direction. And they're still trying to dig out of it.
Yeah. Weston Clarksville says, so are those bad picks on J-Rob? Two of those were really good players in college. Isaiah Wilson was good, and so was Burks. I wouldn't have drafted Farley because he was hurt to begin with. Well, I mean, look, you start getting in the first-round picks. How many first-round picks are you talking about that don't have good college careers, right? And doesn't happen very often where it's like, oh, that's a first-round pick, and he didn't really do a whole lot in college. So that's part of your job is projecting ahead. Now, you know, I mentioned these three that they drafted. It's very different stuff, right? Like, Isaiah Wilson was his own thing. Like, it's his own
disaster. I give them the most grace on him. By far,
right.
of the three drafts, because
Farley was staring you in the face, right? And
staring you in the
and
face.
there were medical reports that we talked about on the show with Farley that other teams had, where he was totally off their board, and you chose to pick him in the first round. So that was, I mean, that, to me, that's different than Isaiah Wilson. That's different than Burks. Like Burks, there wasn't a whole lot of injury stuff with Burks in college, and he was very productive in college. And then he got to the NFL, and the guy just can't stay healthy, right? Like, his body just totally fell apart on him.
But the Burks thing also, you can't separate it from the trade.
Correct.
Right? So that's the thing about Burks. I mean, that's why you could make the case that of all of them, that's still the worst just because it was also the separation of the one time. I mean, obviously, D-Mace. Like, basically, you have, in your Titans history, you have drafted two great receivers.
Yeah.
In a quarter century. And you just had one entering his prime. Bye.
Yep. It's really tough to swallow.
We're not going to put it to bed, Ed.
really tough to swallow.
Yeah.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take more of your thoughts on the Titans. Plus, Rex Road has had just about enough of a certain sports entity, which we will get to coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. 102.5, The Game, and Souls for Souls have teed up for a back-to-school fundraiser, Souls for the 615, to provide new shoes for kids experiencing homelessness in Nashville. You can help a child in Middle Tennessee step into the new school year with confidence by donating $20 for a new pair of athletic shoes. For more information and to donate, visit thegamenashville.com/shoes. Souls for the 615 is sponsored by Macero and 12 South. You can go check them out for handcrafted cocktails, bold plates, great happy hour, and elevated hospitality as well. Again, head to thegamenashville.com/shoes to donate. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe, there is a sports entity that you have had just about enough of as it relates to the world of college football. And with that, I'm just going to turn the floor over to you and let you go here.
Well, I wanted you to get in on this because we talked about this some last week when you were gone because they had their media days. But, like, it really is. And, you know, I linked on our grid here a piece. And Scott Docterman did a good piece, you know, laying out some of the history of how, you know, the Big Ten – Actually, if you went back over time in the last, I think he did the four team area. If you stretched it, you know, to a 16 team thing, you know, how like they would actually have more teams in that time period than the SEC, which is great. So this is the 5-11 format, which is the format they if they're going to do 16 or whatever, they're going to do 14, do 5 plus 9. 5 plus 9 means 5 automatic qualifiers. The rest are automatic bids. It means, yes, a selection committee is involved in picking the teams. I mean, it'd be great to get rid of the selection committee, folks. I heard Rhett Lashley on Feinbaum yesterday, and he's like, "Yeah, we just need to just get it to where it's just about standings." It's like, yeah, and it sounds good, Rhett. So standings in college football,
yep,
in different leagues with different strengths of schedule, with different numbers of games you play. With
that won't cause a problem.
With different non-conference scheduling approaches, which I think is very key. But the 5-11, you know, Doctorman's piece here, the Big Ten would have averaged 4.9 spots from 2014 to 24. SEC would have averaged 4.6, which is great. So if that's the case, and you're the Big Ten, how about go with that then?
Yeah.
Do that. If you're that confident that that's how it's going to be moving forward, again, I'll sit here and list out all the programs that I think – have championship potential in the SEC. I'll list them out in the Big Ten. The SEC has a lot more. I mean, whether you like it or not, that's reality. But those numbers are interesting. It makes me wonder why the Big Ten would be interested in the stupid auto bids thing. But it's just like it's like they're the Stepford coaches in the Big Ten. I understand that you're generally going to support your commissioner. But, I mean, Eli Drinkwitz made fun of his 30-team playoff thing. At least he like didn't fault like he his plan is the same as the Big Ten's.
Yeah.
At least he like had his
which
own.
Makes total sense,
had his, yeah, I know, but it had his own original thought. It's terrible. I mean, he's like, this selection committee don't need that. All they do is reward the big brands. Eli, last year Indiana got in over Alabama, bro.
Yeah.
But other than that, you're totally on point. But the Big Ten stuff, some of the stuff coming out of there, and Kurt Cignetti, you know, last year's darling. I think Kurt Cignetti's on his way to becoming, like, a very disliked person in college football. Like, did you see what he said about
this?
Yeah. He gets rid of – they get rid of Virginia on their schedule so that they can, you know, so that they can just play – first of all, Virginia sucks. Have you not noticed
that?
I
mean, it's acting like they've gotten rid of, you know, Georgia or something. It's Virginia.
Like, if you play Virginia and beat them, you get credit. You played a Power 4 team. Yeah. That's what we're doing. We're counting up all the Power 4 teams on the schedules. I agree with anybody who says everybody should play 10 on a 12-team, on a 12-game schedule. So, if you're the SEC and you're only playing 8, okay, then play 2 Power 4s. Fine.
Agreed.
Virginia counts. But no. Let's get rid of Virginia and play Kennesaw State or whatever they're doing. And then he makes the joke of, hey, we're just doing the SEC thing. And Blake Topmeyer had a really good comment about this USA Today. It's like, so if you're any of the people on the selection committee right now and you hear Kurt Cignetti say that, and we all know they got in, and I argued for them to get in, and it was close, but I think they got it right. But fine. If you're on the selection committee and you hear him say that, and all everybody's screaming about is strength of schedule. Did he just hey Kurt? These people are making selections of the future. Maybe he just thinks Indiana's going to go 8-4 every year and it won't matter. You know, well, I mean that's probably more close to reality anyway, right? But it's like, do you understand that you're almost like taunting the system and you're reveling in playing garbage?
Yeah,
It's nonsense. And they're like, well, we're not going to schedule these games if we don't get this automatic qualifier plan. So to you, it's more important that we totally devalue these games in September. Then you'll play them. I mean, it's just it's stunning to me the stupidity that is just coming out in streams of the Big Ten. And again, you know, then you get into this stuff and it's like, oh, SEC, Homer, a Big Ten. I don't give a crap. The SEC is full of crap sometimes too. And if they would be supporting this system, they would be just as much. But they actually, their coaches actually look at it and say, yeah, we're good. We don't want that. Big Ten coaches, they say they're good, But I don't know, man. If you want this system, you don't think you're that good.
Boy, do they love Tony Petitti, too. My goodness. Oh. I mean, some of the praise, and again, you're not going to find too many coaches in conferences that don't say some nice things about the commissioner from time to time in their conference. But, like, and I think Docterman put it in here, like, didn't all but two teams, like, open their statement?
Yeah, this is a great plan.
We love Tony Petitti. He's come out, and he's really got it going on here. And it's like, geez, guys. I mean, do we not realize at this point that their plan in the Big Ten here for the format that they want, it's not happening, right? Like, the SEC's not going to get on board with it. And
I hope
right
not.
Now the ACC and the Big 12 don't look like they're getting on board with it either. So it's not going to happen. So, like, how long are we going to do this song and dance here where they're going to try to push this? Because at some point, you got to make a decision here. I mean, when's the deadline? December? So at some point, we got to get on the horse here and make a decision.
So, yeah, I mean, again, when it comes down to it, I guess you could say, hey, this looks good because it looks like it's just going to be a stalemate and then they're just going to default to staying at 12.
It's fine with me.
That would be great. That would be fine. But in the meantime, just the idea that they're pushing this so hard, and I don't think the SEC is going to buckle, right? Look, the SEC goes to 9 games. Maybe the Big Ten says, okay, great. Well, we'll all agree on this. But, I mean, the way they're talking right now is this is independent of that anyway now. It's not even like it's like an either-or thing. This is a great quote from Petitti. He's like, quote, "Your obligation is to give fans things that are meaningful. They care about the tradition of it and all that, but we're also trying to get to the next generation of fans to connect and have those moments, those opportunities."
They care about that stuff, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, the tradition and all that. But here, let me have some gimmicky garbage so that we can juice up the TV ratings a little bit in the short term. I'll make my money, get the hell out, and good luck to everybody in college sports.
I'm just glad that we are able to refer to them as the Big Ten. I know for some coaches in that conference, they can't say the names of the other conference, right? Like James Franklin's that other conference. It's like, oh, the other conference where you spent a few years and at that time we're talking about how much better it is than everywhere else? Yeah.
The one you worked in? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, my. At least I give James Franklin credit for, like, basically indirectly ripping Petitti. Like, yeah. Be great to be in a media days where our media could come cover it.
Yeah.
But we're in Las Vegas, so I guess not.
That other conference? Well, who are you referring to, James? Didn't Greg Sankey put up a nice little photo of, just said TOC, that other conference?
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
I missed that.
It's good stuff.
Okay, that's good. Let's get back to the, you know, it's like the Big Ten, the SEC, they got their little memo that they have the power, and so the ACC and Big 12 just have to sit there and take it. But I'd like to see a Big Ten SEC hatred between commissioners here.
Yeah, I would too.
I think Tony Petitti's earned it.
I think so. 615-737-1025. Our phone number. We'll take your thoughts on the Big Ten part of this with the college football playoff. Plus, some big news in college football yesterday that we'll get to as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. We'll have Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel coming up at 7 o'clock. We'll get the latest on Tennessee and Boo Carter as they're about to open up fall camp in Knoxville. We'll have the Brian Callahan press conference later this morning, right around 7:40, as they step on the practice field today at 8 o'clock. So looking forward to that coming up a little bit later in the show as well. We will get to some big news yesterday in college football here in just a moment. But, Joe, first, are people screaming to get rid of – preseason polls in college football?
Very disappointed in friend of the show, longtime friend of mine, Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. Love the guy. I almost always agree with his takes, especially on college football. I mean, unfortunately, he's a Chicago pro sports fan, but that's okay. This is another Big Ten coach special. You know, Rittenberg was out there at Big Ten Media Days. He's like, talked to a lot of Big Ten coaches, and if I was prepared for this segment, Robbie, I would actually have this tweet in front of me. But I'm paraphrasing, although now I'm trying to find it. I want to make sure I have this right because I was very shocked to see this from Adam Rittenberg. But basically, here we go. He says, "I brought it up to several Big Ten coaches. They agreed. The preseason polls should be obliterated. They carry too much meaning and shape debate, overvaluing slash undervaluing teams before we know anything. And I'm like, Adam, this is stuff that people talked about. I mean, they've been talking about it forever. Every year I hear this, and it's like, that sounds great, but it's never going to happen. And no, I don't even he and a lot of people are way overrating what it means. Again, last year, what was Alabama preseason?
Oh, God, top five, weren't they?
I mean, some people, yeah, they were certainly top five. Last year, what was Indiana preseason? Unranked. They were not ranked.
Yeah.
And if we, and you know, I know that Chris Vanini, friend of the show, who ranks all the teams, had them in the 80s. Indiana made the playoff. Alabama didn't make the playoff. We react to information as it comes. Again, Indiana are a great example of good and bad, whatever. You can use them in a lot of different ways. Very versatile example. We got to stop this thing. This is a mini rant because it's an annual thing that people will say. And it's like, do you really think we would go without preseason rankings? Again, you can be mad about them and you can think, well, but this is another Big Ten talking about it. The SEC has all the SEC has a built-in advantage because the ESPN and the preseason rankings. I mean, you're right that there's a ton of SEC teams usually ranked in the preseason, but it's usually because, they're good. They have a lot of good players. They were good the year before. We react to information. There are voters who are bad, and I definitely agree with anybody talking about this. There are voters who they have their preseason, and then this is what it is. And then, I just moved this team a spot, and I just moved – no, early in a season as a voter, you should move it all. You should be able to blow it up every week, right? That should happen more. The preseason rankings it's too stagnant from what they are, so I agree. But also, the rankings don't freaking mean anything anymore.
Well,
it's
don't.
It's just there. They're just there for us to, here's a big game on TV, number 3 against number 7. Also, it is part of program history, too. We have 9 wins against the number 1 team. We are, 7-15 against top 5 teams on the road. I mean, we're not getting rid of this. Can we stop talking about it?
Oh, by the way, Alabama number 5 in the preseason poll last year.
Didn't get them in the playoff.
Did not.
We watched them play football and said, nope, you're good. Sit home or go play in whatever bowl game.
Florida State number 10 in the preseason poll last year.
Wow. That
didn't go so well.
It didn't seem to help them. Yeah, I'm shocked that Rittenberg bought into this. This is a very, very tired talking point. And again, it just doesn't mean at all what people think it does. Yeah, we have preconceived notions of teams, but we do, I think, most people react to information that they get on Saturday.
Yeah, it didn't take very long to realize that Florida State sucked last year.
Right.
Wow, they are really not good, huh?
And by October, everybody was talking about Indiana.
Yeah.
I mean, again, Michigan, where were they ranked last year? Preseason, probably somewhere decent. Maybe not because they lost so many players, but they also were, they fell out of the rankings quickly. It's amazing.
Number 9.
There you go. Number 9. So number 9, Michigan. Number 10, Florida State.
Yeah.
Number 5, Alabama. None of them played for anything at the end. I mean, it's just how I don't get it. I don't get why we keep talking about this.
Some news in the college football world yesterday. Deion Sanders announcing that he is currently cancer-free after battling bladder cancer, and he had to get his bladder removed. And says since the surgery, there have not been any traces of the cancer and that he will be coaching this year. But Deion Sanders making that announcement yesterday, Joe, that apparently he has been battling cancer and is now cancer-free after having surgery to remove his bladder.
Yeah, I mean, it's been obviously kind of a big mystery. There was some college football account yesterday that was breaking, Deion is done, and then it's like, no, I'm actually not done. It's great to hear that, the doctor said, he is cured from cancer, which is great to hear. And, I thought he was really good talking about it. I mean, first of all, talking about, don't Google stuff, which is, I agree.
Yeah.
He said, quote, that's the wrong thing to do because they tell you, you're going to die, dog, end quote. He also said, I depend on depends. So, I mean, there's absolutely a huge Deion Sanders depends ad campaign that is coming big time.
He said, if you see a porta potty on the sideline, it's real. I'm just telling you, you're going to see one at practice and on the sideline.
Oh, man. So, but, I mean, he's had some stuff. I mean, he's had the toes, obviously, and so it's good to see. It's good to see him beat it and be back. And I know he said that Randy Moss, of course, who he's got bile duct cancer. You know, he's been calling him a lot and things like that. And man, I mean, it's just you figured it was something significant, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's great to hear that he's beating this, or that he has beat it, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, Deion Sanders, obviously a very controversial figure, but I believe college football is certainly better when he is coaching and is a part of it.
It's more interesting.
Definitely more interesting.
Is he going to be a sympathetic figure now?
I don't know.
You know?
I got his in son, all seriousness.
People seem to not like his son, so he's not there anymore.
It's true. In all seriousness, like the post Shador Travis Hunter era at Colorado and like how good they are this year is going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah. See. Yeah, very interesting. I mean,
Caden Salter walking around there.
Yeah, that's right. Is he their starter?
I don't know for sure that he's their starter. I think he's the leader in the clubhouse.
Leader in the clubhouse, yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. Tons of turnover. You know, there's been a lot of talk about like the he doesn't recruit high school kids, you know, conventionally either. So what's the staying power of that program? I mean, he's turned around the worst program in college football in Power Four. People should remember that. But also, I mean, the results haven't been what they were, what you would hope. And like you said, when you have a, I mean, granted, Shador Sanders did not go high in the draft like we thought he would. I still think that as purely as a player he would have. But then, you know, Travis Hunter.
His jersey retired, though.
That is true. That is true.
And number two will be hanging from the rafters up there this year.
But Travis Hunter was great and will be great. And they'll miss him.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel will be with us coming up next. We'll get into the latest with Tennessee and the Boo Carter situation. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.